Hi everyone, welcome to Potluck Food Talks. We're in the middle of somewhere between Basque Country and La Rioja. Have you been to La Rioja before?
I've never been to La Rioja. I'm really excited.
First time as well. And we're going to talk about the deep and diverse world of noodles.
Noodles.
Do you have a favorite type of noodle?
Don't ask. You know the answer to that, Eric. Where do noodles come from?
China, for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, it has to be.
This is a bunch of Italians crying right now.
No, they know this. They actually, they
in denial.
They claim it was Amerigo Vespucci? No, Marco Polo. Marco Polo, the one that went to Asia and brought noodles to Italy. There is this creational myth around pasta.
Yeah.
That it has to do with China. But yeah, I mean, like, it's such a complex elaboration that you don't see in other cultures, except the ones that were influenced by China. But, you know, taking a dough and stretching it up until you have, like, this fine string and multiplying it 100 times and some cases drying it, some cases throwing it directly to boiling water. I mean, it's a very non-obvious way to treat wheat or rice.
Do you think so? I think it's actually like, I don't know if I would agree. I think it's a very like common, I feel like you can find a kind of noodle in every culture. And obviously the question is, when did it come there? Like, when did they start doing it and stuff? And
but you know, in Mesoamerican, for example?
Yeah, good. That's true.
Or African, you know?
Yeah, that's
but
true.
And the ones in Europe were introduced by Asia.
Yeah. From the Silk Road, like all the way down. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but that set apart, yes. There are different styles of noodles. And for example, Italians and let's say Germans and Catalans, they have their own thing, which is different from everything else.
It's interesting, like if you look at the history of like pasta. I know like John Regefalk does a very interesting talk on pasta. John Regefalk from the BCC. And I remember he was talking about like how pasta used to be eaten in the beginning, where they used to make like big sheets of dough and like dry it out and then cut it. And this is like very, very different approach, and how that then developed over the years until all these little like different pasta shapes derived that we have today. Because I mean, if we just look at Italy, the shapes of pasta are insane, you know. And then if you go to China, I mean, it's a completely different thing. China is like a world of its own, and like the type of noodles from like north, which is like deserty kind of like with like lots of Muslim influence, to like the southeast, you know, like Sichuan, one thing doesn't really have to do with the other. You can't generalize China as that.
Not at all. Same with Italy and even other regions of Europe. You will find like specific types of pasta particular to every region, or noodles. Let's say spätzle, for example, it's pretty much its own thing.
That's true.
And it's this amorphous kind of noodles, you know, like
it's its very own technique. That's very true.
Yeah.
Should we talk about what the technique is?
Yeah, well, the traditional way, you have to mix it. Usually it was mixed by hand.
Yes.
And while mixing it, you have to say, du zau, du zau, du zau.
No, that was that was just your experience, yeah. That's
You want to tell the story that you witnessed?
So the chef that we used to work for, Eric and I, he learned to cook in a very traditional German restaurant when he was young, and he had to make spätzle dough by hand. So as Eric just mentioned, spätzle dough traditionally gets beaten with a flat hand and stretched as you beat it to really, really stretch the gluten, because it's like fairly liquid dough. You can't knead it because it's too sticky. Yeah? And we at one point made spätzle in this restaurant. We were all kind of like beating the dough, so to say. And then the chef came, he was like,
he started whispering at my ear, and he's like, you have to say du zau, du zau, du zau, which means, how would you translate that?
You pig.
You pig. Like, but female pig.
And then he started doing it, and he started just like, his gray
hair. The result is really better if you say that.
Well, yeah, you think so?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think we should try. We should try this out with more than just spätzle.
There are like these mantras that you have to do. What you...
I can imagine like a sushi master making nigiris while whispering to Zao.
Yeah, and I don't know, talking to the storm gods, move the waters of the sea, or something like that.
Yeah. But yeah, so spätzle, you beat the dough, you let it rest, and you put it on a wooden board, wet wooden board. You scrape it flat because this dough is basically like a paste. You have a pot of boiling water, salted, lightly salted, and then you have a scraper. You wet it, you flatten the dough out, and then from the edge of the board, you shave these like thin noodles into the boiling water.
You cannot scrape them into the water with a knife or a spatula.
Yes.
So that you have like this little pieces. That's the most traditional and old school way. Today, of course, you have like, which I had that actually at home. My dad would do that at home, like this presses where you put the dough inside and you, and then it goes out.
I know. I've met the granddaughter of the man who invented the press. Actually,
really?
She's a friend of mine. Yeah.
Okay. What do you like spätzle with?
Huh?
What's your favorite thing to eat with spätzles?
Well, lots of things. I mean, episode earlier we were talking about game.
I think spätzles are like a really nice side dish for game and
for like a goulash
and stews and goulash.
Yeah, but also, I mean, you can't forget about Käsespätzle.
Of course,
Käsespätzle, Austrian delicacy with caramelized onions, a certain kind of cheese, and then gratinated, absolute classic, super delicious. But also with like a chanterelle cream sauce, for example, like in mushroom. Super tasty. Yeah.
And game.
Absolutely, yeah. And game, everything together.
Do you have any favorite Chinese noodle?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like, I'll probably butcher the pronunciation, but I love the biang biang noodles.
Ah, fuck! I was going to say exactly that. Yeah, I swear.
It's so good.
I found this place in Barcelona where they do biang biang noodles, and I go there every single time I go to Barcelona because it costs like, I don't know, like $5 for a big bowl of this. I would describe it like a XXXXL tagliatelle, right? You know?
Yes.
It's like this thick tagliatelle, like this long, like wide, plain kind of noodle.
Yeah. And it's like stretched by hand. You make a certain dough, you kind of stretch it, and you flip it and bang it against the table as you stretch it. And then often you rip the end and rip the whole noodle along the center to make the noodle twice as long. And then you get a biang mai noodle as just one long noodle in the bowl.
And use some fucking lao gan mai on top of that, and that's it.
I went to there's a new noodle place opening. Well, it just opened in Berlin. It's called Mr. Noodle Chang. And it's supposedly a chain from China, and they do hand-pulled noodles. And it's super nice because you can choose your noodle thickness. I know you would like that, eh? But you can have like really flat noodles, so like really thinly stretched noodles with like just really simple traditional like beef broth, braised beef brisket, some sour fermented mustard greens and chili oil. Ultra delicious, so comforting.
I remember being with John Regefalk in a street market in Malaysia and having a Chinese hand pulled noodles just in front of me. I have videos, I can post them on this episode. It was so cool. The guy it would take him like less than a minute, like pang, 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 pulled to the water. And then I remember John said something really interesting, like that we in Europe or in the West, that we really underestimate the power of or undervalue the power of a simple, nice stock.
Oh yeah, 100%.
You know, like just having like a good chicken broth and noodles, and that's it. That's pretty much it. That's like an amazing meal that you have, and I think that's way more appreciated in Asia, especially in China.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, we do have it in Germany as well. I mean, like in Europe, but not close to what it is. And actually, there's an interesting dish from Austria called Fledle, which is basically a pancake. You make pancakes, you roll it up, and you cut it into thin noodle strips. And traditionally, that is eaten in a clear beef or also maybe game consommé as noodles.
Yeah.
That's basic.
I've had that.
Yeah, and it's super delicious. It's really, really... because the pancake, the porous texture, it soaks up a little bit the broth, and the texture of the noodle changes. But like what you were saying about this broth, I went the other day to a very famous pho place in Berlin. Berlin, huge amount of Vietnamese people living in Berlin since like a long, long time ago. And so there's really, really good pho places. One of the most famous ones being Monsieur Wong. And I had one of the most exceptional pho the other day. It was like, and the power of the broth, crystal clear broth with like eyes of fat swimming on top. And then loads of fucking herbs and spring onions on top. And then the traditional rice noodles. But the broth, there's, I would wager, there's few things that have an impact on you eating as a well-made broth, whether that's a dashi in Japan or like a clear, you know, consomme. If it's well-made and balanced, you drink it, you feel it in your entire body.
You know, like the history of pho is super interesting because, as you see, it's a beef broth, and that's not as common in Asia. So you will find more like chicken or pork, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason is because it was not meant to be for Asians. You know, you had like these street food vendors in the south of Vietnam that would sell this to the French. It had just more demand, and it was a bestseller if it was a beef broth instead of a pork or a chicken.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so
oh,
they, wow, started to develop, and this spices added to it, you know, like clove. And I had the best pho in my life. It was in Malaysia as well, a Vietnamese restaurant there. Incredible. It's one that is listed in the Michelin guide. We went there just for the pho, and yeah, you could feel the spices go through this beef broth and with this rice noodles, and also, like you said, herbs, citrus. I mean we have to go to Vietnam, man.
Yeah, no, I have it planned for beginning of next year, actually, that I want to go to Vietnam, because I'm dying to go. Pho is like such an interesting broth because...
Without me, so you didn't tell me anything.
Oh, we can talk about it.
Okay.
In private. Pho is a really interesting broth because you like, you basically like char the ginger and you char the onions. And it also has, like you say, star anise and cinnamon, really importantly. Cinnamon for me is like something I'd rarely put into, like, I would never think of putting cinnamon into a broth. Like me personally, like unless it's like very gamey or like something. But it works so well, it's so delicious.
And clove. Same thing. I would say the same thing about clove. It's very traditional, this thing that you put a clove into an onion, or in some cases, like 20 cloves into an onion, like something very French. But I think when it's subtle, and I think it's a key part of a good pho broth, like the sachet, the piece.
Yeah. Talking about noodles, and if we then go from China and Vietnam to Japan, obviously everybody always talks about ramen. But you know what I think people don't talk about enough? Is soba.
Mac and cheese.
Soba and udon.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody always talks about ramen this, ramen that, but the soba culture, and especially the udon culture, that is like something that almost only the locals keep for themselves. It doesn't really go out that much. It hasn't become like a international sensation like ramen has.
I had the best noodles in my life in Kyoto.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, it was a soba place, and it was the flagship place of like, kind of like a restaurant group. It was a huge mess because all of the, you know, these vending machines in the noodle shops, it was all in Japanese. So and there was a queue. So we didn't have time to use, we felt completely pressured. There was like no, with the Google Translate, like, I don't know, just pick something. Just, whatever.
Just press the
press
thing,
some button, you know.
Pay whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I didn't have actually what I would have if I wouldn't push a random button. I had soba and like to dip it.
The dipping sauce, the cold one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was cold to dip it. And in this place, the particular thing about it is that they would emulsify the broth. So they, every once in a while, you would see someone with a turban like, and it was like this almost peel broth for the soba.
Wow.
Incredible.
That's crazy.
One of the best bites I had in Japan, for sure. I'll send you the address.
Man, I think it's so underrated. It's like the cold soba. For people who don't know, soba are buckwheat noodles. And there's different types of soba. There's soba that are made from a mix of buckwheat flour and wheat flour. But the soba masters, the real soba masters, they make the sobas out of 100% buckwheat flour, which is super difficult because buckwheat has almost no gluten, right? So making a cohesive noodle out of it is extremely difficult. But obviously, if you have it 100% buckwheat, the flavor is much more intense. I think there's like cold dipping sauce. Usually you get condiments next to it like nori, grated daikon, sesame, and wasabi, I think, also. Huh? And then you have the tensuyu, the dipping sauce. And you mix that in, and you take a portion of your noodle, you put it in, and you slurp it. extremely delicious. But then something that blew my mind when I was in Japan is that then you have this like dipping sauce with still the condiments. You finish your noodles. They bring you a little can of the cooking water from the noodles.
Okay, I never saw that.
That is insane. Because they give you this like slightly salty, starchy water, which is almost a broth. And you pour that into your sauce and then you drink it like it was a broth. It's like buckwheat tea.
Wow, okay.
And that like blew my mind. And I thought that was so cool. And also this absolute appreciation for kind of using everything.
Yeah, and also resourcefulness. This is something that probably originated in poverty, you know, like...
100%. But then becomes an appreciation, yeah?
Yeah.
Udon also. Have you had like cool udon experience?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. For me, udon, it was limited to this kind of earthworm size white noodles.
Yes.
But then you also have like squared udons, you know, like...
Yeah, it's different styles. Yeah. Regional styles, yeah.
Completely different styles of different udons, yeah.
I think that's Sanuki udon, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, but some are round, some are square, some are a little bit thicker, some are a little bit thinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say udon is like the ultimate sort of like people food in Japan. Honestly, like the more you get into like real sort of Japanese eating culture, udon is really like an
comfort food,
everyday food. It's super affordable. It's like there's lots of different toppings. And it's basically just a wheat noodle. I've actually, when I was in Dubai with Michael, started making udon fresh in the restaurant. So I was making udon like every like 2 or 3 days. And we stopped buying udon altogether. Udon is kind of funny because it is a firm dough. And it's kneaded extensively so that you get this texture. Traditionally, you make the dough and then you put it, you wrap it, you put it on the floor and you step on it so that you knead it with your feet. So if you see udon factories, even like in cities where you have like a small udon restaurant that somebody took over and they still make the noodles in-house, they will take off their shoes, they'll have like a little area and they'll put the dough on the floor and knead it by stepping on it in a particular way. Then afterwards, you know, you roll it, you rest it, you roll it out, you cut it fairly thick, and you boil it for a really long time. When I was doing it, it was about 12 minutes. Boil it, and then you wash it, you rinse it in cold water. And that gives you this like bouncy...
Elastic, I would say.
Yeah. There's this word in, I think it comes from Korean food, it's called QQ. This like texture, this like bouncy, starchy texture, which is very appreciated by Asians.
This chewiness, right?
Yeah, this bouncy chewiness that you also have in rice cakes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Super nice.
I was just going to mention this Korean rice cake that feel like rice gnocchis.
Mm.
Also super, what's the name? Ebok or something like that.
Oki, something like that. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, I had one of those recently with tomato sauce and cheese.
Yeah,
and for me it was crazy. Like, I haven't got so deep into Korean food, but finding like tomato sauce and cheese with Asian noodles was very counterintuitive for me, you know, like, but apparently this is something in Korea, you know?
Yeah, I also, I feel like I really want to educate myself more on Korean food because that's like another whole world. But like, for example, the whole ramyun culture, which is totally different to ramen culture, you know, so like there's similarities, obviously. I mean, even the name.
Everything goes back to China.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
We haven't talked about Italy.
We have not talked about Italy enough. But people talk enough about Italy, you know? Like, you have to showcase other places of the world.
Okay. Have you tried this? These are like sweet potato starch noodles that are also Korean.
Yes, I love those.
That are like translucent, you know?
I love those. They have them in Japan as well. They're, for example, a very quintessential part of sukiyaki. I don't know if you've had sukiyaki.
Rings a bell, but I'm not sure.
It's almost like shabu shabu, right? So like you have like different things cooked down in like a sauce, and you have these like glass noodly, starch noodly type noodles. I think that isn't it starch called konjac? Konjac? I feel like that might be the name for it.
Okay.
That you put in and braise. We used to have it on for star food in Ryogin a lot when I was working in Tokyo. Super, super nice. Again, like a super particular texture. This like braised starchy thing. I think you also have it in like other things like oden and stuff like that. You know oden?
No.
It's like this like one pot stew of like chunky stuff. It's like also a Japanese comfort food where you have like whole eggs and like big chunks of tofu, big chunks of starch, just like stewing in like a seasoned broth that you then kind of like take out as like ultimate comfort food basically. Thai noodles don't get talked about a lot. Have you ever had khao soi?
No, and I'm my knowledge is not so deep about Thai food. But you've been to Thailand, right?
I've not been to Thailand, but I've spent a lot of time cooking Thai food with Thai cooking experts, and I actually learned a lot. Khao so is super amazing. Basically, it's like it's almost like a Thai spätzle, in a way that you make this like slurry, this like dough, and you put it in a press and you press it into hot water and you make these like pressed noodles. You take them and you can deep fry them, and they make this like big nest of like crispy noodles. So often you have these like noodles. I think it's a breakfast staple in Thailand. They have these noodles and like a spicy coconut curry with a big chunk of like crispy noodles on top. It's super delicious. I mean, you eat that for breakfast, you're set. You're ready to go. You're with your foot on the gas pedal.
Well, something I can say about like Italian pasta in general that can be learned from is you have this whole diversity of shapes, and these shapes have like particular functionalities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, for example, like some are just lines that are just designed to catch more sauce.
Yes,
or these shapes where the sauce goes inside so that it explodes in your mouth when you bite, and it's part of it. Also, the way of cooking it, there's this mistake of washing the noodles that some home cooks do, adding hot water or even adding oil to the water.
Who does that though?
It's pretty common.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty common. And at the end, you're not allowing the pasta to become sticky and get the sauce stick to it.
Yeah,
which is what you want, right?
I think we've talked about it in Home Hacks, that like finishing your pasta in the sauce or even like adding some pasta water to your sauce.
Yeah.
Is happens so often that you have like that I have to do that, especially when I'm in a restaurant. I cook pasta all the time. It's like 90% of the time that I finish pasta in the sauce, or at least add some pasta water to the sauce. I think what a lot of people also like forget is like pasta isn't pasta. Like if you talk about Italy, if it's like because you don't use the same recipe of a dough for say a tagliatelle or pappardelle, right, that you use for example for a filled pasta. It's a completely different dough recipe, you know, whether you only use egg yolks or you use whole egg.
Or no egg at all.
Or no egg at all, exactly. If it's just a semolina, you know, flour and water dough, which is also very common, they have completely different functionalities, like you say, completely different attribute. So I think in general, you know, with China, it's very obvious. We can't generalize it. It's so vast. It's like a whole universe in itself. Culinary also, because it's like the fucking birthplace of so many things, you know. The influence that China has had on so many things that have come out into the world is insane, you know.
If you think about it, it's a culture that has existed for like 4,000 years.
Yeah, it's crazy.
As the same, it's not like I don't know, Romans became Italians, and you know, no, Chinese have been Chinese for the last 4,000 years.
Yeah, and like it's the same with Italy. You can't generalize Italy, and I love that. I love looking at these sorts of things and realizing that food is like an ever like changing flow. We like to think of like the time and place that we're in now and like relatively recent traditions and saying, oh, this is from here and this is like that. And it's always been like this. Like, no, it's a constant exchange of cultures. You know, it's not, people get so pressed about cultural appropriation when it comes to food. But actually, when you look at it and you take a few steps back, everything is a constant osmosis of stuff.
Yeah.
Of an exchange of cultures, you know, the Arabs coming to Spain, you know, and like people say, oh, this is Spanish, you can't do this, you can't do this any different way, you know?
Potatoes come from America.
Exactly. And it's like
rice from Asia, you know, like, yeah. Especially when we talk about produce.
Yeah. And it's like, chill out, you know? Food and eating is the thing that we all have in common, you know? And we should celebrate the like, the constant flow and evolvement.
And everything that is a tradition today was an innovation at some point. Somebody did something crazy that was not okay to do, you know? And if it was good, it survived during some generations until today.
Yeah. And it started at one point, but it doesn't mean that that's the final stage. It keeps evolving and evolving and evolving. It'll keep doing that. Things that we find traditional today will keep evolving also. And new impressions will come, you know, new cultures will merge and mix, you know, a big amount of immigrants, you know, like, what about Nikkei cooking, you know, sort of like, no, like, now a thing of itself, you know, just born out of, you know, immigrants coming to a country and making something out of it.
What about New Nordic? You know, just like a group of visionaries decided to create like a new cuisine out of scratch.
Yeah.
And that's insane, you know, like, and it's something that today is distinctive.
Now it's a thing.
You can say these are the features of New Nordic and you can identify it and yeah, distinguish it from other cuisines.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, food and culture are inseparable. And just like culture doesn't stay the same, it keeps evolving, food will do the same.
That's it for this week's episode of Potluck Food Talks. If you like what we're doing, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok as Potluck Food Talks. The show airs every Monday.